In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is Nick Piunti, a Detroit area singer-songwriter. He's got a couple of new singles out now on Gem Records, and one of them, Bottle It, is a recent coolest song in the world. We'll hear a portion of that now, followed by my chat with Nick on your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. The Mighty Manfred here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and it's Coolest Conversations time. And I am pleased to say joining me is Detroit area singer-songwriter Nick Piunti. He's got a new single, Bottle It, out now on Gem Records, and it's our coolest song in the world this week. How are you, Nick?
I'm great, Manfred. Great to speak with you again.
I'm so happy you are doing so, because by my records, this is the sixth time we've spoken since 2018. Did you know that? Number six.
I do know that, and I consider myself honored, blessed, and very lucky to, you know, land a cool song. They're really tough to get. I mean, so Stephen, thank you. I know you have to give the thumbs up to make this happen, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I wanted to remind everybody about your background, since we haven't really talked about that for a long while. I know you grew up outside Detroit. There's a family business, is the restaurant, right? What is the name of the restaurant?
Our restaurant is called Sibley Gardens.
Okay. And
doesn't really say much about the food, but it's an Italian steakhouse.
Italian steakhouse. Did you ever think that it would be possible to balance music and restauranteering?
Well, those are the two things I wanted to do. I kind of left the restaurant business, you know, for a couple of years. In the 80s, we moved to L.A. and with our childhood band, which was called Dwarf. We changed the name to The Take. I think we thought we outgrew the name Dwarf, and we'd have to be called what, Little Person today? I don't think you can say Dwarf, but
Dwarf? Didn't you get that from like Bob Dylan's publishing company?
His publishing company was Dwarf Music, was what we were told by our manager at the time.
Well, wait a minute. So let's get the, you said childhood band, but I guess it's, what's crazy is that you form it like you're in sixth grade. That's when you initially have this idea, but I mean, you kept it going and you went out, moved out to the West Coast. You put out at least one single, maybe some more. So tell us about Dwarf, because were you already even playing an instrument at that time when you formed the band in sixth grade?
Yeah, well, we started playing around with guitars. My best friend, Pete Maderi, and we always thought it would be kind of cool to have a band. And our friend Mike Finn, who is a more accomplished guitarist than we were, and he had some really hip parents that thought it was cool that we could rehearse at their house. And so, you know, we started just by learning some cover tunes. The sixth grade talent show, I sang Be My Lover, the Alice Cooper song. And so that was kind of the start of things. And then we learned to write songs. We had a manager who was 9 years older than us, rest in peace, Merle. Merle Arter was his name. And he was kind of, he was in a band, you know, of sorts, but not a serious band. But he had this great idea that he was going to make us the next Beatles, or at least maybe the next Raspberries, and or the next Slade or something. But though that didn't happen, you know, we grew up together with this vision that, you know, we're going to be a rock band. And eventually we went to college. Pete and I went to Wayne State University in Detroit, and we said, okay, now what are we going to do? You know, my girlfriend's going to law school. Your girlfriend is probably going to dump you soon. So what are we going to do? And we decided both of those things happened. They both dumped us. And we moved to California and did the band thing for a couple of years. But, you know, life went on. We really weren't the right kind of band. We talked about that before at the time. And sort of came back.
Well, let's touch on that. Well, why were you not the right kind of band? What does that mean?
Well, the bands that I liked, you know, really weren't what was happening in L.A. at the time. I mean, I think the years prior to the early 80s, I was into, you know, R.E.M., which was, you know, obviously hugely successful band. But the L.A. scene at the time was the hair metal stuff. I like the Replacements a lot. Which I still like. Tom Petty I like, but by the time we got, you know, Tom Petty was 5 years past Damn the Torpedoes, and the whole hair metal thing was going on. I didn't
well, you know, let me interrupt this to just because I think this is funny. So I lived in Athens for you know, I graduated high school in 83 and went and then made my way up there and went to school up there. And so the woman that lived across the street from me, this is Vanessa Vega. She, with the help of her sister, now still has booked the 40 Watt for many years, but at those days she was going out with Jefferson Holt, who at the time was REM's manager.
Right.
And then, so he found out that the Pandoras in L.A. were auditioning for another guitar player, the woman guitar player. And in town, Vanessa had an all-girl band called Mystery Date. And she was like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely want to go and try. So she went and auditioned. When she came back, she was like, she's like, man, for all those people in L.A., you know, it's like, damn, I moved out of my house when I was like, you know, 14. I like left home and 15, or 15, I can't remember, you know, left home. But they all still live with their parents out there, man. And it's just weird. You know, it's like and nobody has ever heard of REM out there. And this was like 89, 90, I think, you know, whatever the green album, the orange one had come out, you know, and had the Follow Me and there were these hits, but nobody in the scene there, they're so insular. The hair metal thing was still so insular that nobody was aware, at least in that world, that she was, you know, auditioning in and the people she was coming in contact with. But I think, you know, that just a point that reiterates, reinforces what you're saying. You know, it was definitely the hair metal was king. And you know,
yeah, it's pretty interesting. Even in that time when I was in LA, I was doing some demos, work with playing guitar with Gina Schock, the, you know, drummer for the Go-Go's. And I remember a time talking about, you know, she asked, well, who are you like? I said, I'm really into REM. And she's like, yeah, they can't play that good. It was like, so that was the LA, maybe, you know, sorry, Gina, but you said it. But it's like, no, that it is good. It's, you know, it might not be, you know, the kind of shredding or something that you had to hear, but you know, I loved REM, saw them a ton. But yeah, it was just a little different.
So you were familiar with REM. And so when was the first time you had seen them?
Oh God, I saw them in Detroit, but probably, you know, it was, and I saw them actually when I was out in LA too. They played at outdoor place. Forgot the name of the venue, but I think I probably found out them right. And right after Murmur came out. So okay, I guess it wasn't.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty, that's really early.
But
on.
Yeah. And, you know, reading about them in Rolling Stone, that's how you found out about music back then. You'd read, and you know, so I found out about the Replacements or REM or
anything. So what year did you actually come out to Los Angeles then?
In 1984.
In 84. All right. So that was still pretty early. early on with the even REM stuff and
Yeah, I
the
remember I had a buddy that had a Rickenbacker 12 string, and then I figured out, you know, some REM songs, even though I don't know if Peter really played a 12 string much, but he played a Rickenbacker. But you know, it's just sounded so good. South Central Rain's got to be on, you know, played on a Rick. So I really got enamored in that with that band. And yeah, so they were pretty integral. And I think my songwriting, not that I write any songs that really sound like REM, but it was really Fall on Me. You know, it was like, what an amazing song, you know.
Well, so Dwarf, so you're out there with Dwarf, and then you changed your name from Dwarf to The Take. When
Yeah,
were
we're called The Take. And then in the Dwarf, you know, we kind of grew up. My brother, Sammy, Sammy passed away just a little over a week ago, and he was 2 years older than me, but he was so embedded in Dwarf. He didn't play in the band, but he was like our roadie. He would help with our heck, he built a PA system for us and painted it red and yellow. We had the red and yellow thing before the White Stripes had red and white. We had red and yellow. But we yeah, he would do silk screen, you know, for our logo. He'd make that. He was like the jack of all trades kind of guy. He could do anything, flash pots and fog machines. In fact, one time a flash pot went off unexpectedly when I was leaning right over it. I remember I was playing the intro to Adam's Apple by Aerosmith, I think, at a Groziel Youth Center gig, and the splash pot went out, and all I knew was like my eyes, like the room went like bright, and I could smell the burning hair. So I kind of had long hair back then, and I was like, so he said, "Oops, sorry," but I still think he might have done it on purpose because I was quite the stir, you know. I was the annoying little brother that, but he was he's. I was very tough for our family, but I said, he's in a better place. And all these great memories rushing back on when we were kids and with the band and trips that we did. And so I'm thinking about him a lot lately.
Do you have any other siblings?
Yeah, I have two sisters, Andrew and Maria. They're not musicians either. They're smart. So, but one's in real estate and one retired, and she golfs all the time. So. She used to be my partner in the restaurant, but got to a point where she kind of had enough of the restaurant. I haven't had enough of it yet. I'm still there daily.
Well, good. Good, because so next time I come to town, I'm gonna have to check it out.
Next time you come down, you got to like text me, Nick, I'm coming to town. You didn't see my Facebook when we were playing until after the gig, and I felt like a dummy. So.
Okay, so Dwarf, then it becomes The Take. Did you release any records as a take?
No, we didn't. We should have. We had some recordings too, pretty good, but maybe one day, you know, we'll see the light. I've still got some master tapes, but
Well, I want to move forward a little bit, but I not more forward than last year for a moment, because last year you had a single out, Heart Stops, or yeah, Heart Stops Beating, and that you had done that originally on an album back like 2015 called Beyond the Static.
yep.
So remind me, the version that was last year, was that the same tune reissued, or had you re-recorded it?
Yeah, we recorded the vocal and a new mix, and actually did the rhythm guitars again because I just thought they were a little bit jumbled. So yeah, it was like a refresh, same drums and bass part. That's probably same solo, I think.
Were you going to
But yeah,
reissue
just
the
playing
whole
refresh.
album, and it did come out Beyond the Static?
We did that, and then I went back and remixed some other songs, and like through the it was like the pre-gem. Yeah, I had two albums. I'm 13 in my head and Beyond the Static. So Marty and I were talking about redoing it. But then I started writing songs and I was kind of like, nah, you know, I always kind of guy that looks forward, not backwards. So, and I think I wrote Bottle It right about that time. I said, you know, I really want to put the attention towards this new stuff. And so it was like in both
Well, let
those
me
first
interrupt
two
for a second,
albums.
because you mentioned Marty, and when you
Oh,
speak
but
of
yeah, I'm
Marty, you
sorry.
mean the head of Gem Records.
Yeah, he's the hem of Jeff. Gem Records. He makes me call him Mr. Marty, but I just call him Marty. But no, he doesn't do
Okay,
that,
so you had new
really.
songs percolating, and that's led to our coolest song in the world this week, Bottle It. It's one of two new compositions out as singles from your upcoming album, Up and Out of It. So when did you record these new tunes, the album, or did you do them all together or piecemeal?
Yeah, we did actually five songs last spring. It was kind of interesting because we were. You know, the band was rehearsed. We were tight. We were ready to go, and we were scheduled to go in on a Sunday morning at Big Sky in Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff called me. He said, hey, we got a power outage out here.
And who's like, Jeff?
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeff Michael, our producer engineer.
Okay.
Jeff Michael, the owner of Big Sky, called and said that we have no power. He said, hold on, I've got an idea. A good friend of his, a friend of mine, also is named Dave Feeney. He owns a studio in Ferndale, Michigan, called The Temper Mill. And Dave's a fantastic guy. We actually are friends and go golfing several times a year. But the studio, I think, I don't know if it was for some reason it was available or the other band, it was an ice storm and they canceled. But so we met Dave at the Temper Mill, and Jeff actually did some work there years ago setting up the studio. So he was familiar with the studio, and then Dave was there. So it was really cool to have Dave's ears there too while we were recording those tracks. So we did Bottle It, Get the Feeling, and three other songs that are going to be in the next album.
Well, cool.
So and then that's a song we recorded this March. So it was kind of like a year in between. Five is a good amount of songs for us to focus on at once. You know, we're all busy. We all have careers, jobs. To record a whole album, like in one weekend, I mean, it could be done, but it's just, it seems like the songs wouldn't get the attention that they deserve, you know?
I agree with that. Well, according to the liner notes that I was given, it looks like you recorded this with the Complicated Men. Is that correct?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And a real band effort. I mean, you know, I'll bring the songs down, but then it's like open to interpretation. I never tell Jeff, bass player, Jeff Hupp, what to play. I don't specifically tell Ron what to play, but between the whole band, we all kind of work it out. How about trying this? How about that? We're always like saying, try this. And I was like, hey, throw anything at me. And if I like it as at least as much as what we're already doing, great. If it doesn't work, you know, we'll know right away. And Bottle It was one of those. Actually, both of those songs were, you know, you bring songs down to the band, sometimes they look at you like a deer in the headlights. It's like, you're not getting it. You don't like it. Maybe it's not that good. So I try to make sure I only bring down, you know, really good songs. Most of the ones that I bring down, I say bring down because we're in a basement. We have basements in Detroit. That's,
so you're not a garage band, but you're a basement band.
Yeah, we're really a basement band. I mean, I was talking to Steven about changing the name to Little Steven's Basement Band, but he didn't go for that. But anyway,
well,
yeah, the band.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We just throw ideas at each other, and I'm really thrilled with, you know, everyone's input.
Well, tell me, what sort of ideas did these guys throw at you when you were putting Bottle It together?
The arrangements, you know, is always kind of up for interpretation too. It's like for example, we in the beginning, I think the kind of chord progression, I think it might have went through twice, and it was like, how about just once and just right go in the verse? Joe Doc Savage, I finally pronounced his name right after 3 years of him being in the band, because I used to call it Doxowitz, because that's what it looks like. But he says Doc Savage. I think he wants to be like a superhero. But anyway, that's what we call him.
He is a superhero. He's a lead guitar player, right?
He is. And he's so unassuming. And he's probably the first guitarist I've ever played with that on stage, I'll say, hey, Joe, you know, you can turn up a little bit. I've played with some guitarists.
What a freak.
Isn't that great? I mean,
that's the guy you need to bottle.
That.
He needs to be bottled and sold to bands.
Yeah,
all
he's
over,
so good.
All
he's,
the world.
Just, he's kind of unassuming, and he's the baby in the band. He's only 41. And, you know, when you got some almost senior citizens in the band, so it's kind of refreshing. But he's got an old soul. He fits in with us.
Well, I'm glad to hear you've taken this youngster under your wing.
Yeah, exactly.
What specifically inspired Bottle It?
I don't know. You know, I think, you know, the first line in the song, you know, yeah, I curse the radio. I spend a lot of time with my youngest daughter, and she's always listening to the local, you know, what's she called? Big kid radio station. She's 20, but she's autistic. So she's got some of her, you know, mannerisms, and she really likes things kind of the same.
Or she'll listen to Sirius XM, and I can get her to listen to the Underground Garage too, but she also likes the Pulse, whatever. Yeah. And it's like, Olivia, they play the same songs over and over. It's 20 songs. We just heard a song 2 hours ago. So I think that's where that, it's not about Underground Garage, because there's always introducing new music and obscure things. And
right.
So it's about that. It's kind of about the culture of radio. And then I started thinking, what else is culture is the same? You know, like the people like I go to high school with, if they go see a live band, what do they want to see? They want to see a tribute band. It's like, you don't really want to go see a Journey tribute band, do you? But that's, you know, it's like their window for discovering music was so small. And there's so much amazing music that happened since their high school days or college days that people don't get past that. And I think that's, I'm not like that, obviously, because I just keep writing songs, you know, and I've even gotten friends in music that have had some success, but like their success was 40 years ago, and that's all they do still. You know, they play these songs from 40 years ago, and it's like, that's great, but what else you got? You know, and I think that'd be tough. I mean, that's like, you know, you always got to keep creating, or you're just a tribute band even to yourself. I always
right. Well, you've already, in fact, you touched on that earlier when you were saying we were talking about heart. What is it? Heart stops beating, or I'm going to want to miss. Heart stops beating, and you know, that was talked about revisiting the albums, and then wait, you know, I've got new songs. Let's put that on hold for a while.
Yeah, and you know, and I never say that like this is going to be the best album, but I really kind of feel that with this record. You know, we survived, you know, releasing an album right before COVID, and then we making an album through COVID, and that was difficult. And the song subjects were maybe a little bit darker, but I think this, as the times were, but I just kind of feel like, you know, I'm 63 years young, and it's just like, and why not? I mean, you see, you know, Bruce Springsteen doing what he's doing, the shape he's in, Paul McCartney touring the Stones. I mean, it's like, it's kind of timeless music. And, you know,
Thank you. I agree. I agree 100% with that.
But you're a baby though. I mean, you were born, you know.
Like, oh, let me see. How old am I? Oh, you know, I love it when the oldsters called me out, you know. You talked about, we're talking about recording these things. When the album's supposed to come out in the fall, maybe? When is a new album due out?
Yeah, it kind of has to fit in with Gem Records, with their release, what they've got coming up. And Rob was just going to release Bottle It, but he said, well, I'll just do another song because you got a cool song, and then Manfred will play that too. And it's like, yeah, okay. So he talked me into that. and the songs are totally different. You know, they're totally different.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about the other tune, Get the Feeling, in a moment. But yep. First, I want to say that I saw a show listed for June 22nd on your page there, Facebook page. You're opening up for Mike Viola at the 20 Front Street in the Detroit area there in Lake Orion, Saturday, yeah. June the 22nd. Now, he was like buddies with the late Adam Schlesinger, I think. Have you played with him before?
Yeah, I did a solo thing. A friend of mine, Chris Richards, and I, who's a fellow Detroit area musician, we did an acoustic thing opening up for Mike Viola in Bay City years ago. But Mike's, I'm a super fan of Mike Viola. I think he's amazing songwriter, singer. Went and saw him last year. We went back-to-back shows in Milwaukee and Chicago, and then we saw him in in Milwaukee again. And in fact, my daughter, who's getting married this weekend, her fiance.
Oh, wow, congratulations.
He asked me for my daughter's hand in marriage at a Mike Viola show, which he's smart because he knows I was going to be in a good mood. What was I going to say? So, and my daughter's my whole family's kind of Mike Viola fan. But he's, you know, I saw that he was coming to town with a band, and I just said, hey, I know a guy and a week later he said, you're in, you want to play? So it's a real small, intimate venue, but we're looking forward to it. And,
right. And I'm sorry I mispronounced his name. It's Mike, not Viola, but Mike Viola.
Yeah, Mike Viola. I like the instrument, yeah.
Right, right. And so
that's how I feel anyway.
Do you have any other shows upcoming outside of that?
Yeah, we're doing something the week after, too. It's in Ann Arbor. It's kind of cool. This club is called, well, I think they nickname it the Geezer Night, because on Friday nights, there's this club, rock club in Ann Arbor. And it kind of started as for like older rock fans that didn't want to be out till midnight. So the show starts at 6:30, and there's two bands. And we played it last year. And think, who is going to be at a bar at 6:30? And the place was jammed. Everyone's dancing. It's like, oh my God, this is like my favorite gig in years. And these people really get it. And, you know, we're playing all originals and they didn't know the music, but it was such a cool vibe and venue. So we're going to do that again. I just didn't want to advertise two shows at the same time, but, and that thing kind of sells itself out. It's the same kind of people.
And where is it at, though?
It's called Live is the club. So it's the following
Live, like
Friday.
Live?
Yeah, Live.
Oh, all right.
Well, Ann Arbor Live, or I think that's the name of the club. But it's a cool room.
So the other single you have out now, Get the Feeling, came out the same day as Bottle It. I think you already mentioned it was recorded at the same session. You did those five songs together.
Yep.
And they are very different sounding songs. So I put up air quotes here, to get the feeling, was there any specific emotional event you were drawing on to write that?
Yeah, I think, I always have this kind of, I don't know if it's imagination or something. Like, my wife is always concerned, like, these songs, is that about me? Is that about me? So I always kind of feel, she's such an amazing wife, Kelly. I always kind of feel like maybe I don't measure up. And, but then other things kind of maybe creep into my past or something about, man, maybe I could have been a better guy or something. And originally the song was actually called Vampire, because vampire is mentioned. But then you had a cooler song called Vampire, and Olivia Rodrigo had Vampire. It's like, okay, we had enough vampires last year. And since the song starts with Get the Feeling and ends with Get the Feeling, I said, let's just call it Get the Feeling. So, but yeah, that song may be some of my insecurities, maybe is, or don't measure up, or I could have been a better person. Always trying to, like, yeah, but so no, it's not about my wife, not about me. I don't mess around, because I'd come home to Lorena Bobbitt if I did that. So no, that doesn't happen.
So, but pretty, a lot of emotional honesty there. Sometimes songs, you can. Song can come together pretty quickly, and other times it's more of a labored thing. Where on the spectrum did this fall?
Yeah, that's both these songs are pretty easy, and I was kind of talking to my wife about songwriting the other day, that I said, we have three daughters, and they're all totally different. Sometimes it's really easy. Sometimes personalities kind of clash. My oldest daughter, Marissa, and she knows this, she's so much like me that at times it's, we kind of grind each other's wheels. Megan, the second one, was just so laid back in comparison. It was always easy. And then Olivia, our youngest, is totally different, with autism spectrum disorder. But so with Megan, everything is easy, most part. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Megan or Marissa, the oldest, it was a little bit tougher. But just because it's tougher, easier, doesn't mean you love them any less. It's just some you have to work on some things of your own more. And songs are like that. Some of the songs turn out great. Man, you got to put a lot of work into it. I maybe rewrite that bridge. Let me do this. Oh, maybe the arrangement's wrong. And other songs are just like they fell out of the air. So I really can't. I used to think those were the better songs, the ones that just came easy, but I think there's a place for both, especially when you hear an album. I don't know if the listener can tell, but the album, it contains both, both songs. And in fact, on the new record, Joe, usually I write all the songs for the record, but Joe had a couple musical ideas and some chord progressions. And it's like, hey, I kind of dig that. So I wrote some lyrics to it. And another song he had, it was really, it's like, what'd you do? Did you go to the Nick Punti pop songwriting? Because this is something exactly like I would write. Well, the other song was different. And but both songs kind of made them the band songs. I came up with melody and some lyrics, and so those are going to be on the album. Looking forward to those coming out. And got to mention the other guys in the band, Ron Venskor, drummer, so always reliable, always there. Any rehearsal, he'll be there. Jeff Hupp, our bass player, is actually just made completed a movie. It's called Band on the Run. Nothing to do with Paul McCartney. It's about...
Does it have anything to do with The Complicated Man?
Doesn't. It has to do kind of based on his history growing up in music. He had a band called The Atomic Numbers in early 2000s. And they did play South by Southwest. And this movie is about this band on a quest to go play South by Southwest and get a deal, a record deal, like what we all wanted. And the premise of the movie is that the father in the movie is handicapped and just got separated from his wife, just left. She couldn't handle taking care of him anymore. And so what do we do with dad? So there's going to take the dad and drop him off. It's like they couldn't do that. So the dad's on this road trip with them to Texas. And it's a pretty cool, you know, rock and roll tale. And anyone that's ever been in a band, they had the first showing of it in Birmingham. And it was a great experience. And listening to all the cast members talk about it. The one, Larry Bagby, who plays the dad, he's been in a lot of movies. He was in Walk the Line, Johnny Cash. He was the bass player. Oh. He was in that movie Hocus Pocus years ago. He was like the villain in that movie. Really great guy. And it's pretty interesting is how he got the part for that movie is the girlfriend was soliciting restaurants for Larry to come and sing and play guitar at, because he's a musician as well.
Yeah.
Kind of like an alt country type, I would say. But we didn't have entertainment at the time, but I told Jeff, I said, you know, you're casting for a movie. I think I might've found your leading man. And so that was pretty cool how that happened.
And so the film Band on the Run, that is, people can see it now?
Not yet. It's going to go to the festivals, and then they're going to look for distribution next year. Okay, we just had like the one private showing. And then Kevin Darnell is our keyboard player. Kevin's an engineer at GM, very busy, but he always makes time. And he just always plays the most kind of tasteful parts. And if something's not quite right, he's like so open to anything. Oh, you want me to play piano? You want me to play organ? You want me to play synth on this one? Or if I have an idea for melody, sometimes he'll do that. And he's just very, very, very tasty, you know. And he knows we're a guitar-orientated band, but he just kind of fills in. Some of the songs are more, you know, orientated and have the more piano in them or organ, but it's a nice dimension that we added to the band that never had a keyboard player really before The Complicated Man. We would just do some simple parts, but yeah. Kevin can really play. And Jeff and Joe, and then Jeff Michael, our producer, is really, you know, he's our producer. I mean, I've recorded, I think, 7 albums with him by now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I was going to say he's your 7th member. Is that right?
Yeah. He's the,
I was counting right.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot. And then I'll Bottle It, Ryan Allen, my good friend, is singing the harmony parts. We had the song mix and everything, and it's just kind of sitting. And then I said, yeah, I'd like to bring Ryan on because he's got that high harmony parts. And it's like, we need a girl or Ryan, one or the other. So we get, you know, and Ryan, he'd laugh at that because he's got that. He can really get them high parts. And so he's like the frosting on the cake in that song.
Absolutely.
Well, he's got a band called Extra Arms, which is kind of cool because the soundtrack for the movie Band on the Run, Extra Arms did this, recorded this album that fit in perfectly with the theme, you know, starting a rock band and all that. So that is the basic soundtrack.
There are no big Nick Puente tunes on the soundtrack to Band.
There is one. Yeah, there's a ballad called Red Tail Lights from the movie Beyond the Static, but I don't think Jeff wanted to put too much of our band. It's, you know, it's like he can separate. You know, we don't want too much nepotism, you know, and he's got his movie.
Well, no, you don't want too much, but you want just enough.
Just enough, yeah, just to be associated with it. And I like the soundtrack to his next album.
So, Nick, man, I am so happy we got a chance to speak again today and catch up on things.
Yeah, one thing I didn't mention, Gem Records is releasing Gem Records presents Jagger and Richard. So the Gem artists have each recorded Jagger Richard song. So
Tribute record, right?
Yeah, tribute record. So that'll be out, I think, the 31st.
31st of the end of May.
Yeah, end of May. I didn't do a traditional rocker. I actually did something different, kind of out of my comfort zone. Maybe I did my version of Ruby Tuesday, and I think I did it justice. But you know, you're always when you're recovering a Stones tune, it's like you know. But so I tried to put my own spin on it. I hope. Well, come on, is Mick gonna hear it? If he does, hope he's not like too bummed out.
Well, right now, we're going to get a listen to Get the Feeling, new single out on Gem Records from the upcoming album Up and Out of It. It's Nick Punti and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Just heard a bit of Get the Feeling, a new single from Nick Punti and out on Gem Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Nick for joining me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Low Cut Connie, they're from Philadelphia. Their album of last year is Art Dealers, and it features the track Are You Gonna Run, which our very own Stevie Van Zandt has recently remixed and added some guitar parts to and did some backing vocals for. The band's Adam Wiener will join me next time around and tell us all about the final product on our Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.